women. Oral History 2. My name's Wilma Wolfenstein. I'm interviewing Herman Snyder on November 16th, 1993. Would you tell us again where exactly you were born?
I was born in Vilna
or
no,
a little town?
A little town. A little town next to Vilna. Yes.
What was it?
The town was Jevenishok.
Uh-oh. Can we spell that?
Well, let me find something. Liber, I could do it good.
So say it again.
Jevenishki.
In Yiddish?
In Polish.
In Polish.
Yes.
And in Yiddish?
And in Yiddish, Jevenishok.
Oh.
Jevenishok.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And okay. How big was this village?
There were, I don't remember what how many, but it's not a village, it was a town. It probably between 1,200 and 1,500 people lived in it.
Were they all Jewish?
Most of them.
Most of them.
Not all of them, but I would say 85-90% were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And can you tell us a little more in detail about your years growing up in this town?
Didn't I tell you last time?
Well, you did tell us a little bit about your education. Yes. Did your family celebrate the Jewish holidays?
Yeah, they did.
They did.
They did.
When you were asked to leave for your own safety, you were already 21?
Yes.
You were already 21?
Yes.
And it was your family that sent you away?
Well, actually, in a way, my mother, I guess, she knew it, and she encouraged me. I don't remember exactly, but she encouraged me to leave, to run away before they were taking.
But the family didn't want to leave, too.
No, they couldn't. They had two other children, and they stayed with the brothers and sisters, and uncles. But I was the oldest, because my sister was 19 then, and my brother was 17, 2 years apart. So the only one, I am the one who ran away.
Mm-hmm. Like Europa, Europa?
Something like, well, I don't know, Europa, Europa is a different... Europe is a different story. I met the man here. I talked to him. I saw twice, one in San Francisco, one in here. Europa is, I don't know how much truth in that, but I don't believe the whole story.
Oh, I imagine it was embellished.
For
the screen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's some truth in it, but bringing them out and telling everybody that's the way an SS and Gestapo looks, that's the way a German looks, that's why we are superior, and even a Jew. I don't know, it's a problem, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean?
Could you tell us something about the actual journey after you left your home?
Well, the journey was, then I ran in the woods, and then from the woods went to Russia. That's that.
Well, how long? Did you know exactly where you were going?
No, nobody.
You didn't know?
No.
You were on the run?
On the run.
By yourself?
No,
you
forced by yourself. Then you find two others, then you find four, then you are 12. And yeah, that's the way.
Really? People you did not know before?
No. From our town and other people from other places also ran away. It's not only me.
Yes, of course.
Some of them, not many, but a few ran away, yes. And they also lived in Russia. And then after the war, they all left Russia like me and went to Poland.
Did, How did you get along during this period? How long?
And you are young.
Did it take?
Well, it didn't take too long. It took a little bit over half a year, 6 months or so.
6 months. Six months on the run. But how did you get along?
Well, you get along by when you are young, you find this to eat. It was summer most of the time. You know, you get along. The woods has a lot to offer. And the villages, they have a lot to offer.
Villages?
Sure.
And helping people along
the way? Well, not helping people, you help yourself. And you risk your life every moment. Yeah. You do. So that's why some of them didn't survive and some did. I don't know why I did, but I don't know.
Remember?
It's a question you cannot answer. It's almost impossible to answer.
Do you remember any incidents along the way? Is it hard for you to remember this?
Well, it's not hard to remember. You're cut by other people. Some of them you're scared to death. You don't know what they're going to do with you. Some of them even help you in the beginning of the war. Mm-hmm. In the beginning of the war, it wasn't like it started in 1942 when they started losing the war. See, there were 9 million Jews in Western and Eastern Europe. 9 million Jews were there. And incident, 5 there, 10 ghettos were built, but they didn't kill them till 1940, the end of 41, 42. No, it started in 42.
And you left when?
In 1941.
Oh.
When the war started.
So how did you know where to end your journey?
You lived there for 20 years, 21 years. You're familiar with every little tree, whatever. You walked there for so many years, 10 kilometers, 15, 20 kilometers, 30 kilometers. You know those places, you know those little towns, you know the little villages. You even know, you know people you went to school with. You go to them. They knew the Germans were there already because they came in 5 days later, the 27th of June 1941. So you see, when you are free, when you can do things according to your dictation, okay? The only thing you need is something to eat to survive. And be careful, that's all you need. Understand? That's all you need. That's why some of them survived and many of them didn't.
Did you have close calls?
Everybody had close. Mostly calls were not from the Germans, but from the Ukrainians, from the Poles, from the Lithuanians, from them. Yes. They were worse than the Germans, in a way.
Yes. So, at some point, you stopped running away and settled. How did you decide where to do that?
You run from one place, you stay for a while, you run to another place, you are closer to the east. You are closer to Russia. You go east. You don't go west. You go to Minsk. You go to Baranovich. You go to Grodno. You go to Lida. You go to Vitebsk. You go to Polotsk. You go to Bobruisk. You go to Smolensk. You go east, Belarusia. And there is Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And there they already had their partisans too. The Russians had partisans too. You met partisans there.
Partisans who?
Who ran away also from the Germans.
Oh, oh.
Sure, they were afraid, Jews and others. You know, in 6 months, in a year, they had thousands of people in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of them with guns, with everything. They were fighting against the Germans. That's why they call them partisans. Yeah.
But did you identify with the partisan? Do you call yourself a partisan?
Because no, I wasn't. No. Partisan is somebody who actually participated
actively in the resistance.
Against the Germans and against others. Already they had somebody told them what to do, we'll do this, we'll do that. Mm-hmm. I was just running till I eat Russia. And then that was good.
So do you feel that the people in Russia itself were more welcoming?
Well, to answer you this question, to be more specific about it, I would. In 1940-41, from the Scandinavian countries, from Western Europe and from Eastern Europe, there was only one place a Jew could run, is Russia.
As distinguished from the Ukraine?
Yes.
And,
yes, Jews could only one place, the Russians let them in. Mm-hmm. And then they asked them, they had to register, and they could work according to their profession. Okay? Many of them didn't want to stay because it was hard work. Mm-hmm. Once a day, food. They wanted to go back home. Mm-hmm. Stalin didn't let them go back home. He sent them in Siberia. And they all survived the war. And after the war, they all went home. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, the one who didn't register, they sent them to Siberia and other places. But those who registered, who wanted to work, they were there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you registered?
Well, when I came, yes, I registered. They wanted me to go to the army, and I said, no, I'm a carpenter, I would like to... And I was building boxes for the bombs.
Yes, you'd
need
to tell us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And that's it, and it was good. Even once a day, food you were getting there. But it was good. Mm-hmm. It was good.
You felt safe.
Oh, sure. They were doing the fighting. They were dying by the million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Have you ever written up your experiences?
No, like I told you once, I see the world differently. I'm Jewish. I was born Jewish. My father and mother are Jews. I learned something from this, I wish I wouldn't have. I learned about, in my mind, what I learned, it's my opinion, that capitalism and religion is the greatest enemy to the Jewish people. The worst enemy to the Jewish people, religion and capitalism. It gives us a chance to express ourselves, to do what we want according to the Bible. You have a right to exploit, to subjugate, to demoralize others for your own enrichment. And you don't do anything wrong. God forgives you on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for all the sins you committed. The only thing you have to do is repent, charity, and pray, and you can start all over again. If you have a good God, He forgives us. Like Moses went in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, to let my people go with Pharaoh. Why didn't God send a Moses in the tortoise to save the 6 million Jews? Where was he? You understand? Where was he? Men predicted it in France, in England, in Germany, in Italy, in the end of the 19th century. They predicted what's going to happen to the most civilized countries in Europe.
Who predicted?
Men predicted, philosophers and writers, and mostly on the right, the fascists, the Nazis. They predicted what's going to happen. Because that's the way it was all the time. It's all the time like that. In this country, Hitler is gone, communism is gone for a while, I don't know for how long. Now this country got more violence than any place on earth. What's happening here is unbelievable.
Yes. What's the remedy for that?
It's too late, 217 years too late. 1776, Washington, Jefferson, and others. They started democracy after colonialism. They should have understood more the principles of democracy, social justice, human rights. You don't let those who are able to exploit and get rich and are hell with everybody else. That's where the problem comes. See, because we have a right to do that, and it's not against the law. People do it because religion allows you to do that. It's written specifically in the Torah that the poor will never be wiped off from the face of the earth.
Will never what?
The poor will never be wiped off from the face of the earth. It's written. It's
predicted even there.
It's written, sure. Mm-hmm. So this way, people want to be rich, not poor, which I don't blame them. But you have to be compassionate, humane to others. One man cannot do alone. We always need somebody to help us. There's always somebody smarter. And he should be compensated for that. The man who helps us to live better, to whatever, those men should be compensated.
What role?
By seeing that he also will live good. But I meant if the stupid would be a little bit smarter, and if the rich would have a heart to give a piece of bread to the poor, we would have less problems in this world. That's what I mean. Live and let live, not everything for yourself. And because I'm smart, everything belongs to me. Smart in a way, his way. But in the end, 75 years ago, the Tsar, they were doing all those things. Look what happened. They were assassinated. And for 75 years, look how much this country paid in blood and in treasure because of what happened there. Roosevelt mentioned it many times in the 30s with the New Deal, unemployment compensation, and Social Security he implemented. He knew if you don't treat the workers right, nobody's going to have anything.
So you admire Roosevelt?
Well, I don't like him because he didn't let the Jews in. In 1935, 937 Jews, they were already on the Atlantic. It's not that he was a smart man, and he, in those days, he didn't want to go to the war. He didn't want to get involved in the war. But circumstances, because what they were doing to England, and then he started helping England, you know, and then, you know the story. I'm just a carpenter, what do I know?
I'm going to let Sylvia take them.
Hi, Pittsburgh Section National Council, Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Sylvia Sachs continuing an interview with Herman Snyder on November 16th, right?
Yes.
1996. Your story is so interesting. I think one thing we'd like is to have a sort of a chronological list of where all you lived, just because somebody in the future might want to know about one of these particular. So first you were in that little town near Vilna. That's where you were born.
Jivanishuk.
I believe you. Then then you went into the woods, and then you went to this Russia. Now what was the name of the town in Russia where you met your wife and where you stayed?
I met my wife in Russia. Was on the Volga. On the Volga. And the name was, the town was Buzuluk, B-U-Z-U-L-U-C-K, Buzuluk.
Okay, and that's
Volga.
Where you lived, and you had an apartment, and your first child was born there,
yes,
correct?
Yes. Okay. That's why I got married, my, yes.
Okay. Then, when the war was over, where was the next place that you went?
The next place in 1946, we asked the Soviet government to let us go back to Poland, where I was born. And they permitted us to go back to Poland, including my wife and my daughter.
And that was the town that was near Vilna that
we
can't say?
Yes. No. That this wasn't the town. We went to Silesia, Wrocław, Silesia. They call this place Breslau. Breslau. Yeah, Wrocław in Poland.
I think it's S-L-A-U, is that it?
Breslau. Breslau. B-R-E-S-L-U-V. Breslau. Or Wrocław. In Silesia.
And Silesia,
Silesia.
Is part
Sudeten,
of...
It's the Sudeten land.
Oh, that's German.
No, this was Poland. In 1946, they gave this to Poland. They took it from Germany. Yes.
Boy, it sure was mixed up.
Yes, it was. Geographically and politically.
After the First World War, they gave it... They took it from...
the Second World War.
Oh, after the Second
War. After the Second World War, yes. Breslau, Wrocław belonged to Poland.
So why did you go there? Your family was not there now at that point. You just wanted to go back to Poland?
I wanted to go back to Poland, and that's what they sent me. That's what they sent me to this place.
The Russians?
Yes. Involved with the Polish authorities.
Mm-hmm. And so how long did you stay there?
We stayed there from February, I think, till August 1946.
And were you considering settling there, or was this just a way to...
No, it was just a place, and then to go to America. But in August, they killed 40 Jews and 80 wounded in Poland.
In that town? Or
no,
town?
No, it was in Kielce, I believe, in a Polish town in Kielce. In August 1946, they killed 40 Jews, the Poles, and wounded 80. Mm-hmm. When this happened, I read the Polish papers. I paid 30,000 zlotys, and we found somebody and others who came to Poland from Russia, and we went to Praha, Czechoslovakia.
Prague, which we call Prague. Yeah.
Prague, yes. They call it Praha in mm-hmm. Czech, but mm-hmm. Prague, yeah. Czechoslovakia.
Because you were concerned because of these killings?
Yes. I didn't want to stay there no more, no. I would have gone eventually, but I went there.
So was that hard to do, to get out of Poland?
We found people who were taking us across the border from Poland.
Sort of sneaking you across?
Yeah, we paid money for it, yeah.
That when you said the 30,000 zlotys,
yes.
That was to pay to get the underground. It wasn't a train that you...
No, it was... People who were taking us over on the other side. Yes.
And there were others with you, huh?
Yes.
Boy, it's like you're a refugee from 50 different places.
That's why they call in Polish, Jid wieczny tulacz. The Jew is always the wanderer. Mm-hmm. Yes. In Polish, Jid wieczny tulacz. The Jew is always wanders from one place to another.
Now, how was it in Prague?
In Praha, the UNRWA, the American UNRWA, came to Praha and picked us up to West Germany.
Now the UNRWA. What does that stand for?
The UNRWA stands
United,
for...
United Nations.
This is like... No, it's not the United Nations. It's some kind of Jewish organization,
yeah, Jewish.
UNRWA,
mm-hmm.
to help Jewish refugees who survived the war.
Yeah, okay. And they, when you say they took us, you mean this whole group? You went to West Germany, or just you and your...
No. All groups, all 40, 50, 60 in buses, and with the help of the... in Prague, because they still had the democratic government in Prague. I don't know, Benish or Masaryk, I forgot now.
Mm-hmm.
And they were helping to get the Jews away from Czechoslovakia to West Germany. And the town we came to was Regensburg. Regensburg. Mm-hmm. Regensburg.
Was that like a gathering place for the...
No, this was just a place for a while. And they gave us food. They find places for us then, for everybody. It was coming from all over the world were coming there.
So there was a real effort by the Jewish organizations to take care of...
To help the Jews who survive, yes, who run away, especially from Poland or from Russia or from, yes.
Okay. And so by, there was still you, your wife, and your daughter.
Yes.
Okay, then where was the next place?
The next place was off Saale, off Saale in Germany. Off Saale in Germany.
Why did you go there?
Because that's where we, that's where they sent us there. And from there it was München. Munich.
So all this time you're just being shuttered around and like a couple weeks here, a couple weeks there?
Yeah, a couple months, and then what happened in Off Saale, before we went to Munich, I started doing carpenter cabinet work for a German. He was shot. He lost everything. The left, he lost his left eye, left arm, left in Stalingrad. So he had a shop. So I was working for him, and I was getting paid doing cabinet work. Yes. Yeah.
And meanwhile, you knew that. They were arranging for you to come to the United States.
No, it's a story. I don't know if you have time to. I think I told you, though. I didn't. I remembered my mother's brothers.
Mount
and sister. I remember I told you the story about Mount Pleasant. I didn't know PA. 2 years, and the New Yorker lawyer, Jewish lawyer, was spoke Yiddish. Till 48, I was sending letters, and nobody ever sent me even a letter back. Didn't. Till he came. And I talked to him. I said, "What's going on?" I said,
"He
He came to Off Saale, and then I was talking to him in Yiddish. He was from New York, and I was telling him the story. And I'm sending from 1946 till 1948. And I'm sending letters to my mother's brothers and sisters. They were here in Mount Pleasant, and I'm not getting letters. So what I did, we signed up to go to Israel. I have the passports here. Yeah, we signed up to go to Israel." But then finally, when Dee went back, and he got in touch with Leonard Levin here in Mount Pleasant, and right away, 3 weeks, a month later, money. And clothes. They start sending.
Oh.
2 months, I had paper. I was playing cards. I never forget it in 46, in 48. And they called me to the office. Papers came for you to go to the United States. So that's how it goes.
But this man from New York found Mount Lebanon, Pennsylvania, because there are many Mount Pleasant, because there are many.
So many, yes. In Texas.
And you had just sent Mount Lebanon, USA. Mount Pleasant, I could
say. I remember this. I remember Sam Levin, 600 Main Street, Mount Pleasant, USA. But the most important thing, PA, I didn't remember. My mother was in America, see. My mother was in America. Was it? 7 years.
Your other children were born then in this country.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you went to Mount Pleasant, you worked in the furniture store.
No. 4 days I ran away. My uncle gave me a house, gave me a job. I ran away after 4 days. Then they sent me to Kozlov here in Junkyard in Glassport. I came to two rich millionaires.
But in 4 days you knew you didn't want
it. I didn't want it, and then I worked. They sent me to him. 4 days here, I ran away from him too, and I started working for 75 cents an hour. Didn't want no houses, no work from them, nothing.
Were they not nice?
Very nice.
You just wanted to be independent?
I wanted to have a piece of bread, but I control it the way I see it. And if I'll get enough money to buy meat, I'll do it. You see, I want nothing from nobody, because you destroy your children if you give them. They'll never hate you for what you didn't give them, but they will for what you did give them. You love them one way, you'll do anything for them, but then as soon as you give them money or whatever, you destroy them. You take away the initiative, their ambition, their creativity. You take away everything what man needs to be happy and survive.
May I ask you something, and this is like playing the devil's advocate. You want to be independent, you want to do what you want to do, you don't want any... How can you If you believe in the Russian philosophy or the communist philosophy, capitalism is no good, and so on, isn't being what you, doing what you want and being what you want the epitome of capitalism?
No.
You can't in a communist country. Can you do exactly what you want? For instance, I'm just throwing this in. For instance, you're in Israel and you are on a kibbutz, and the kibbutz is making hats.
I was there.
Okay, and you don't want to make hats. You want to go be a electronic.
If you're good at that, they'll let you do in the kibbutz.
You think?
Oh yes.
Isn't the philosophy of a communist, the pure communist, everything for together, you know, and
no.